We present The Sound of Football.
And on this week's show, there's Chelsea in seventh heaven as they add insult to Sunderland's ever-growing list of injuries. Man United giving Burnley a good singing to, not to mention other pieces of sexual innuendo at Old Trafford. And Everton handing out a first defeat to Man City under Mancini. All that, plus a progress report on the African Nations Cup, coming up on this week's Sound of Football. Hello and welcome to another barnstorming edition of Sound of Football. Chris Oakley here as ever, and joining me once again, it's Terry DeFellin and Graham Sibley from Some People on the Pitch and The Onion Bag. Welcome, fellas.
Hello, hello.
Another weekend that has unearthed many a treasure in the world of football. Lots to get through, so let's kick off with a look at the Premier League. And one result stands out. You don't need to be a scientist to work out which one it was. Chelsea 7-2 win over Sunderland. We've already had a 9-1. We thought that was plenty enough to be going on with, but we've got another high-scoring one here. And, I'll throw this over to both of you, see who comes in first in this. But I was just sort of wondering, really, I mean, Chelsea were fantastic, has to be said. They played brilliantly in that particular game. But given the fact that, I mean, my personal feeling is that when Sunderland did manage to launch the odd attack at Chelsea, they still looked a bit vulnerable. So in general terms, with that 7-2, that real sort of eye-opening score, how much does it say Chelsea played really well? And was it a flattering scoreline, really, given the fact that Sunderland did manage to get a couple? And was it a case of Chelsea were really good or Sunderland were really bad? What sort of percentages are we talking here?
I think both, really. I think Chelsea were really good. I think there was an interesting point made on Soccer Saturday at the end of it, because Paul Merson was covering it, and you know, Paul Merson in his own sort of erudite style was enjoying the game. But at the end of it, he did say that, you know, if they'd had that game when he was playing for George Graham would have put him against the wall for conceding two goals, because he would have said, you don't score seven goals every week. No. But you can concede two goals like that every week. Mm. And it's that sort of thing where, you know, all right, one was right at the last knockings where everyone was probably just a bit sort of like, well, you know, 7-1, we don't really have to bother anymore. But you sort of think that, you know, they were keeping close, so many clean sheets. And, you know, one of the biggest criticisms of Arsenal has been, you know, yeah, they can go and score loads of goals, but they do concede a lot of goals. And Chelsea don't want to get into a sort of a goal-conceding habit.
Hmm. Well, I mean, like I say, there are a few occasions. I think there was an early opportunity Sunderland had and sort of exposed Chelsea still slightly lacks appearance at the back. And I mean, we had the whole discussion weeks ago about the set piece vulnerability and all the rest of it, but it wasn't really sort of till towards the end that we actually saw Sunderland actually take advantage of that, albeit way too late. But there's no doubt about it, Terry, that Chelsea were playing some pretty good stuff. And actually, Cole's goal was, I thought, the pick of the bunch.
Yeah, a goal that any of his strikers would have been really proud of. Didier would have been very, very happy with that goal. They just looked triumphant, didn't they? But it did have that kind of air of a sort of stroll in the park. I read something on Twitter. I can't remember who tweeted it, but it said, "You see, there's the problem when you come to places like Stamford Bridge and decide you're going to play, is that you get absolutely ripped apart like that." And I mean, Steve Bruce says much to admire about what Steve Bruce is doing with Sunderland, but I suppose because they are confident as a team and as a club, and they think that they should be going places, they're gonna have a go at clubs like Chelsea, when perhaps maybe it would have been wiser to have taken a more cautious.
Yeah, perhaps a bit more pragmatism in future might you know. I mean, like, it might be less damaging to go to Stamford Bridge and lose 3-0 than it is to go there and lose 7-2.
Mm. That said, Sunderland were without eight. I think it was eight of their sort of key players, their first choice players. So I think, if you look back, I mean, you can only really kind of spot these things, I think, with hindsight, really. But if you watch the footage again when the players are coming out onto the pitch, and then you see Steve Bruce emerge, he's got this look of a man who knows what's going to happen. Or at least he looked that way to me. He looked like he had serious apprehensions, you know, about what's going to happen. I mean, I don't know, but There we are. Sunderland found wanting. Chelsea played really well. So a convincing win for them. What else have we got? Just having a look down the sort of scores and things. I mean, the other thing that struck me, I don't know if either of you saw the Liverpool v Stoke game.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, part of it anyway.
Sorry?
Part of it, yeah.
Part of it, yeah. I mean, I think I've got, you know, the old rug in front of my telly in the front room, I think, because that's got more life in it than the first half of that match. It's just, it was pretty dire, I have to say. I was watching that and it was just, you know, I don't know. But, I mean, Liverpool got their goal in the second half and you sort of think, okay, well, this is what they should be doing against a team with all due deference to Stoke. That's perhaps what you should expect Liverpool to do. They got their goal. But they just they've suffered again from this late equaliser business, and that's like there's been about five games I think in the last sort of few months. I think they were detailed in one of the papers recently in, you know, Champions League. I think both games they played against Lyon in the Champions League, they sort of let in a late goal, and a few of the other games they've had recently, then and they just seem to be switching off at the end, which is a bit of a surprise really. And I don't know, everyone's been comparing Liverpool this season to last, but coming to you, Graham. I mean, what do you think of Liverpool? Really, I mean, can we even write them off now, once and for all, that they're not going to be in the top four this season?
Well, yeah, I think you can. I think the thing is what you see with Liverpool there, that whole losing leads in the last few minutes is a sign of a team without confidence. It reminds me a bit of Ipswich early on this season, when they first started, and they had, and how many times they lost leads in the last minute or so, and it just seemed like you know they had no belief that they were ever going to win a game, even when they were going in, like, you know, with 2 minutes from time, a goal up. It was almost like you know, the inevitable was going to happen, and the other team was going to score, and it seemed. I watched the last. Thankfully, I only watched the last 20 minutes of the Liverpool Stoke game. I was thankfully going out buying taps.
It got to that air of desperation. Yeah. I'll go out and buy anything.
Yeah, but it was. You just sort of think that, like, this ball, the Stoke are going to score. It's just going to happen. I mean, like, you know, even if a team doesn't look like they're going to score, they will score. They'll just find a way of it happening. I don't know.
And the thing is, Stoke are one of those teams that I wouldn't necessarily say Liverpool are going to go there and expect to win necessarily. I'm sure a lot of people thought they would almost automatically, but Stoke are one of those teams who will make it difficult for you, aren't they? And they really battle.
They've got good home form. It's not easy to go there and get 3 points. You know, so it's no shame going there and getting a draw. You know,
but if they'd notched up a few wins earlier on the season, perhaps they could have afforded it, but not at the moment.
Not at the moment.
But the thing I would say there, I mean, is that the next game Liverpool got this Wednesday, in a couple of days' time as we're speaking here, is at home to Tottenham. And as you know, Graham, from having written the midweek TV preview on Some People Are on the Pitch this week, I think Tottenham are in with a chance of doing the double. I think that's what you said, isn't it?
First time since 1987 they've got a chance of doing the double over them. But Tottenham have got to break this hoodoo. They've got to break this hoodoo of going to the big teams, away to the big teams, and actually getting a win. The stat I came up with in the previous today was they haven't won on visits to the big four in 65 attempts, and that's quite a shocking stat.
Mm. And this is like about the best sort of period for them to try and break that.
Well,
run, really,
considering that they've got to fifth place a couple of times in recent years, and they still haven't managed to break that. It's quite a thing.
Well, they're just a better side, Tottenham, aren't they? I mean, if you look at Tottenham's team, you look at Liverpool's team, they're a better side.
Oh yeah.
Look at Liverpool's team: Carragher, Dagan, Kyrgiakos, Aurelio, Skrtel, and Sua Mascherano. Mascherano's a good player, although albeit wayward. Lucas, Kuyt, and Gök. That was the outfield team that played Stoke.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a really ordinary team. That's a really taken side. You know, Tottenham can easily win that game, and should. I mean, they might not. They probably won't, because they're Tottenham, and as you say, they've got this kind of hoodoo about the whole thing. But I mean, there's no reason why they shouldn't just go there and give him a good shoeing, frankly.
Well, no, exactly. I mean, I think it's what you do get the sort of feeling that when Tottenham do break this, it's going to happen spectacularly, and it could easily happen here at Anfield on Wednesday.
It could be 4-0 to Spurs at Anfield.
After the weekend game that Tottenham had, when you know they felt they couldn't even buy a goal, I think you know they've got to go in that really revved up and
absolutely
after Boaz Myhill's heroics.
Absolutely, it's unbelievable. There's for the taking for Spurs.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Somebody mentioned in a paper I read earlier on today that, Liverpool will be ruining the fact that they sold Peter Crouch. But I'm not entirely sure I subscribe to that because I think people were moaning about the ineffectiveness of Peter Crouch when he was at Liverpool anyway. And you could also argue that okay, he was a good player when he was at Liverpool, but maybe just got kind of sucked into the mediocrity that Benitez is purveying at the club, so I'm not sure quite the moment. But yeah, I mean, you could say that about any sort of decent striker on form at other clubs that used to be at Liverpool. I mean,
it's not many players that actually go to Tottenham and become better, but I think Peter Crouch is perhaps one of them.
Yeah, quite. So, yes, not looking too good for Liverpool, but then we've probably been saying that for some time now. Elsewhere, Man United,
Chris, let's say one thing now. It's like mid-January now. Terry, where do you think Liverpool will finish? What position?
Sixth.
Chris?
Sixth.
I'm tempted to go for sixth. I'll say seventh.
Seventh. I think they're going to have a late run. I think it's going to be fifth. But there you go. We'll come back to that later on. I think it's definitely going to be one of those three. I don't think they're going to finish higher or lower than that. But
well, it's certainly curious the fact that Benitez played Degen this week and left who was it? Aquilani left him on the bench.
Aquilani so came in 87th minute, didn't he? And Rodriguez came on was it 74th or something, didn't he?
Yeah, so you've got Degen, who's only played once this season, got sent off in that one. And instead of using his new player, he left him on the bench for most of the game.
Yeah.
And you just mentioned rather skillfully there, Maxi Rodriguez, who's the new signing. Do you think he'll make much of an impact, or is he just going to end up kind of in the mire with everybody else by the time the season's finished?
If he's allowed to play.
Yeah, well, that's it. That's the key thing, isn't it? You know, being played in the right position, in the right tactics, and frequently enough, I guess, just overgeneralised.
It sounds as well as if Babel's out the door now as well.
Yes.
So it's all gone horribly pear-shaped for Rafa, but you know, like actually seeing them squirm in the post-match interviews now has stopped being fun a long time ago.
I know. we'll leave Rafa and all his troubles behind. We'll move on to the fact that Man United got, as I was about to say, if I was rudely interrupted.
Sorry.
Man United got a good 3-0 win. At home to Burnley. It was the first match in charge for Brian Laws, who's taking over now that Owen Coyle was moved on to Bolton. And I mean, I heard bits of this on the radio when it was kind of when it was in play, and it sounded to me like Burnley were giving Man United something to think about. And having seen highlights retrospectively, again, I think Man United started off on the front foot and it looked like they were just going to kind of attack at will. But I think they got so sucked into that, my impression was, they got so sucked into the being able to attack whenever they liked that a few occasions early on, they found there was huge gaps at the back. And that's what Burnley were exploiting. And the general feeling is, and I think even Alex Ferguson has said this in his comments after the match, was that actually Burnley were a bit unlucky and the result didn't exactly show how well they played in the game, and it was quite flattering towards Man United. Not the best of starts for Brian Laws, but I think in essence he'll be quite pleased with the way they started. What either of you have feelings on either Man United and their current run of form or Burnley's chances?
Well, I think it could have been worse for Burnley. They had enough say in the match to offer some kind of encouragement for Brian Laws, who's got a massive job on his hand. David Nugent could have scored, really. Yeah, yes. Perhaps should have scored. If they could, you know, I think there's definitely encouragement for there. As for United, well, I don't think it really changes anything. A straightforward by the numbers win for them. Berbatov scored. They could get some encouragement from that, but
looks like he's injured now, though, isn't he? Really?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So not. I mean, Van der Sar is back for whatever that means, but you know, Wes Brown is still in their side, so you know, and you know, for as long as he's in there, and you know, Gary Neville, who is a fabulously experienced player, but I mean, you do wonder, you know, whether he has the energy to help out down, you know, down those flanks in the way that he has in the past. I mean, look at their midfield. Of, you know, I mean, Valencia is very solid, very dependable. Nani is not, and no. you've got Scholes is playing so far back now that, you know, he's almost, you know, buying a season ticket at the Stretford end. So you know, so it's just they're just again, I mean, although I think they have more staying power, they do look short of what you would normally associate Manchester United team to be, but you know, nevertheless, certainly good enough to beat the likes of Burnley.
I was just going to say, actually, I mean, that's where they're kind of a step up from Liverpool. At least they're getting results like that against teams like Burnley.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's interesting for United, because I think I was reading today that they're looking for Rio Ferdinand and some fella called Owen Hargreaves to come back at the end, within the month, and you sort of think how different would this Man United side be with two players like that in it.
But that, having said that, Rio Ferdinand wasn't exactly in the best of form just before he went off injured. So
no, no, well, exactly. But I think what he was carrying when he was in that form.
I think there are some doubts about Rio in the longer term as well. Yeah. He just doesn't seem to have been right for some time, and if he has been carrying an injury, then you do worry that, you know, he'll always find himself carrying an injury. It is awful to see. So quite embarrassing and cringeworthy when you see centre backs just suddenly go, and they do go. Yeah. I think Carragher's gone. Mm. You know, I think it's possible that Rio's gone, which is bad news for England fans, because he's kind of, you know, our really only realistic option next to Terry. But we'll see. We'll see when he comes back. We'll see whether or not he can recapture some of that, if he's still got his pace. And of course, if he's still got his confidence.
Yeah.
But carrying that injury for a long time is never good for a good player. And you know, I'm a little bit concerned going into the season. But you know, we'll see. We don't know the reality, and we'll see what happens.
Okay, and I mean, just very briefly, to sort of scratch the surface of an emerging story with this whole Man United kind of business going on in the background, and the fact that, is it not, the fans are now suing, I don't know if it's the Glazers or it's Sir Alex Ferguson, basically attacking Alex Ferguson in order to get at the Glazers. Do I understand that correctly? I think that's the kind
some,
of thing.
I think what they said is that if you're any sort of fan of United Ferguson, resign from the club just to show the Glazers that you know, they can't have it all their own way, which seems ridiculous. It's like, you know, I know what, I don't like, let's bite my face by cutting my nose off.
The fact that, you know, that sort of suggesting that, you know, Ferguson's like a socialist, and yeah, you know, he has these kind of beliefs, and yeah, you know, how is he really getting on with these people that have just come in, and obviously the Glazers, who a lot of people had hesitation about, you know, had apprehensions about allowing into the club in the first place, and so on, and is it all for the good of the club in the long run, etc. That's about it, isn't it, in a nutshell?
Yeah, I think it. I don't know how much. It'll be interesting to see how much they've got. I think the whole crux of their campaign is going to be this. They're going to turn up 10 minutes late for the Milan game.
Oh, Lord. Pathetic. How about don't turn up for the Milan game? That might do it.
Yeah, don't
actually turn up in the game. Don't buy the ticket. But picket the stadium and encourage other fans not to buy the ticket as well, as a mark of protest, and then stand outside with radios and listen to the game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just the attitude of some fans. when they get all they make out like they're all militant and that. It's like, you know, you like they're, you know, they're wagging their finger and they're telling off the girl, the person who is rogering them at the backside.
Exactly.
They're still being rogered up the backside, but they're just like not very happy about it.
Yes. It's just, like, I'm going to turn up 10 stupid. Minutes late for my rogering.
Yeah, big. I'm still going to get rogered, and I'm actually going to pay to do it as well. And I'm going to complain all the way through.
On my face while you're doing it.
Absolutely. But all will be forgiven if. Oh, no, maybe we shouldn't take that metaphor any further.
Well, as I say,
we'll finish in the end.
I was going to say, if that gets an explicit badge on the iTunes download, then I don't know what will. Anyway, there it is. Lots of funny goings on at Man United. But I think we should reserve the sort of, well, I'm not sure about performance of the week, but certainly performance of the moment to Everton, because they're unbeaten the last six, albeit they've drawn four of them. But Everton are playing some fantastic stuff. I mean, I dare say at long last, but I think maybe even their fans would agree. They're on great form. They played Man City this week and won 2-0. And a fine performance all round. First defeat, I think, for Mancini since he took over at Manchester City. So,
yes.
Well done, Everton. And, Terry, a slick performance all round.
Absolutely. A fantastic performance. Everton were just something else. They were brilliant. They looked at, I mean, if you'd have looked at the two of them and said which one has been assembled for hundreds of millions of pounds, and you'd have said Everton. I mean, really, really good side. And Fellaini was awesome. He wasn't the only one. I mean, they were all good, but Fellaini was particularly good and was playing in a way that I think probably David Moyes always felt he knew the boy could play like that. But his performance was summed up by that defensive pirouette,
yes,
where he took the ball off the toes of Bellamy and in a pirouette manner. And just sort of like spun around. Yeah, and left
against
Bellamy
anybody, that would have been good, but particularly because it was against Bellamy.
Yeah, Bellamy just standing there going, what have you, you know, what have you just done to me? And then, and that was great because then he passed the ball. I can't remember who had it then, who got it, but there was an Everton player who got it, and suddenly the game just stopped. Everybody just stopped because I don't think anybody actually believed that Fellaini had done it. And I think genuinely the City defenders just stood there and went, so what happens now? I mean, they're on the floor. They're not getting up from that. I mean, they just completely suck the life out of them. And you do occasionally see a football match where a team of, even though they didn't win like 9-0, they still clearly outclassed the opposition to the point where the opposition have literally run out of ideas.
Yeah, it was the lowest scoring hammering I've seen in a long time.
It was brilliant. It was brilliant, and it was really good, and really worth watching. Fantastic game.
I think what it was that City were poor, and just Everton just basically just kept tweaking their nose and tugging at their cheeks and telling them that they were poor.
Absolutely.
I think Everton rather could have won that one easily by about 4-0 if other efforts had gone their way, but. Yeah, and your man, who's your South African player? I forget what his name is.
Pienaar,
of course. Yes, he's also on fire at the moment.
Fantastic,
good
season,
great stuff there. And City in a bit of trouble there. Santa Cruz came on and then probably went off injured. Some would doubt why he should have even been played in the first place. But I guess one of the key talking points there was the fact that Rubinho came on as a sub for him, and then was subbed himself. And if that doesn't pretty much draw a line under his prospects at Man City, then I'm not quite sure what does. He was replaced, and I think somebody sort of said he was on the pitch for about an hour and did exactly zero. So there it is. Will they kind of admit defeat and sell him on while they've got a chance? I'm not sure.
Who are they going to sell him to?
Well, exactly.
Who's going to buy him? I mean,
which smuck's going to buy him?
He's on, what, stupid money a week? no one's going to pick up that contract, are they?
Right. I suspect not. And, I mean, not only that, but any prospective buyer would have to sort of question his commitment and all the other things we've probably discussed.
Exactly. The only option they've probably got at the moment is if someone in Spain is going to pick up a third of his contract, I would think.
A loan deal to Spain or maybe Chelsea, which is the place he wanted to go in the first place. But can you see Ancelotti?
No, he won't touch him with a barge pole.
No.
Ancelotti's got enough on his plate as it is, worrying about whether he's got to strip naked at the end of the season, at the end of the month, if he ends up buying someone in the transfer window.
Well, a loan wouldn't be boring, would it?
He doesn't realise that he might have to make good on that promise that people are expecting. He just, especially what happens when you make throwaway comments to the English media.
If Essien's going to be injured, then he might have to buy someone. But
exactly. He wouldn't have known when he made that. He wouldn't have known about Essien, and of course, Essien was injured in the Africa Cup of Nations, wasn't he?
Which is about as smooth a segue as you're ever going to get on The Sound of Football, because that leads us very nicely into the second part of the show, in which we're just going to do a quick resume of all the goings on over in Angola. As we spoke to you last time, things had only just got underway, and we were talking about the whole terrible Togo situation, but there's been plenty of football in the last week or so, and as things stand, it looks like the host nation have finished top of their group, Group A, with one win and two draws. Algeria have made it through after a bit of an uncertain start, and of course I'd say Algeria in a slightly heightened voice because of the fact that they're in England's group in the World Cup, as probably everyone knows by now. They've gone through on goal difference ahead of Mali. Now, I mean, from what little I know, gents, I mean, a few people were betting on Mali as a sort of as a long shot. And yes. And they're not going to be going through to the next round now, eliminated as they are. I mean, from what I've seen in the last couple of African Nations Cup, Mali are a team that are like your sort of second tier, if you like, in African football. And I was a little bit surprised when I heard one or two people saying, "Oh, you know, you should put a bet on Mali if you're that way inclined." But I mean, I hate to say I told you so, but that's them out, and I'm not sure they're not yet qualified for World Cup, so that may be one of their best chances for a while gone, unless they've got a continuing sort of...
That's the thing about dark horses, though, isn't it? In gambling circles, is everything seems to be almost in place for Mali, but never really quite getting there. I mean, like, it was only a quarter of an hour that they showed any sort of decent football in the first two games in the Cup of Nations, in that crazy last quarter of an hour against Angola when they came back from 4-0 down to finish 4-all,
which was as much about Angola's sudden, you know, heading backwards.
Yeah, exactly. Angola, what was the term?
Was so
what
bad
was the
they
term
were
you used
gonna
on
start.
Twitter?
I said that it pretty sooner or later they're going to start unscoring goals. They're so bad. They're really, really awful. And who knew that Malawi would? I mean, say I assume the Malawians knew, but I mean, who among us knew that Malawi would be as good as they turned out to be? And although it's a shame they didn't qualify, they'll take a great deal of heart from their performance and their excellent victory. And
very much outsiders, but gave a good account themselves, certainly.
I guess the Algerians, after such a disastrous start, were probably told in no uncertain terms that if they played like that again, they would be watching the World Cup from home on the telly. So, I mean, maybe that might have helped them because they've obviously turned it around. But it's great to see the Angolans, the host nation, through, because it's always, particularly in the Africa Cup of Nations, because the attendances can drop off once the hosts have lost interest. And so you want to see them go. And I think there were concerns that might happen, wasn't there?
Well, I think somebody mentioned only today the fact that there are a lot of almost empty stadiums in this competition. But to be fair, I think you do tend to see that quite a lot in the African Nations Cup, where it's held when the host nation isn't playing. So I don't think that's a one-off thing, really.
I think that's not only in Africa, though. I mean, I think if you were to go for a lot of continental tournaments, I mean, like, we're quite lucky in Europe in the fact that most countries here are quite well off, and you're never that far away from where international tournaments are being held. So you're going to get a lot of travelling support. I don't think that is necessarily the case
in a wider perspective.
Yeah.
Elsewhere, Group B, remember that's the group that's somewhat shortened now due to Togo's absence. Key match there is going on tomorrow, Burkina Faso playing Ghana. The Ivory Coast definitely through, they've won one and drawn one out of their two games, and Burkina Faso against Ghana, basically it's winner takes all. A draw would actually see Burkina Faso go through rather than Ghana, so that'll be a key one to watch. Elsewhere, Egypt who of course haven't qualified for the World Cup this summer, they've qualified 2 wins out of 2 so far. Nigeria in a good position to go through 2 in Group C, and in Group D, Gabon, surprisingly top of the group ahead of Cameroon, Tunisia in 3rd place, but that's a very close group. Could go either way. Any predictions for who we think could end up winning outright?
Egypt.
Yeah. Going for Egypt. Right? You've got to go. Yeah. I mean, on past form. I mean, I don't think any team's ever won the three African Nations Cups on a trot, and I would say there's a very good chance of that happening, the way we've seen Egypt play thus far. A lot of the other teams are looking a little bit sort of, I don't know, unconvincing in certain respects, like Nigeria, one team I'm sort of, from what I've seen so far. But all good stuff.
Yeah,
anyway,
I'm hoping that it's gonna improve a bit. I mean, like it's quite good when you see tournament football and there's a few upsets, but I think you do sort of want to have like the teams to sort of settle in and show some form rather than blow hot and cold. So I think that's gonna happen over the next few games, hopefully.
Quite so. Well, I reckon that'll do for now. That pretty much deals with everything we want to talk about this evening. Thank you very much indeed, chaps, for your company. We will be back next week, as ever, for another Sound of Football. For the time being, the usual reminders, go to iTunes and subscribe to us. Leave us a comment if you don't mind. Feedback is everything to us. And, of course, go to our Sound of Football Facebook fan page and the Sound of Football blog site, as well as Some People on the Pitch and The Onion Bag, if you dare. But for now, from the Sound of Football, from all of us, thank you very much indeed for your company, and it's goodbye for now.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.